It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. Tonight, it's just the two-man crew, Kyle from LaGrange Barber right here. And I'm joined, as always, by Bubba Rosenbaum. Dave Richmond is sick tonight. He's feeling a little under the weather. We hope Dave is feeling better. Nothing serious, just a bad headache. But a head like that can't help but hurt. Bubba, how you doing, man?
Doing great.
Well, as we record tonight, we're recording this on Thursday night. We reported earlier the emergency podcast for Scotty Montgomery getting fired, and now we're doing our regular podcast, if you will. Any more thoughts, Bubba, on the Scotty Montgomery situation with him being terminated today?
Not a whole lot. I think it's obviously something you hate to see. I know a lot of people say, of course, the guy makes over $1 million. I don't feel sorry for him. And I get it from that standpoint. He's certainly okay financially. But just from the human perspective and his family having to go through a transition as well as the rest of the coaching staff, And that's what I'm referring to. And then, of course, the players, the relationships that are there, and a lot of things that were tweeted out, such as by Holton, Darius Penix, the other players, pretty touching and emotional stuff. And you get it. I mean, they were recruited by the guy who's their coach, and certainly have nothing but best wishes for Coach Mo going forward.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I can't be a hypocrite, you know. I was very vocal in my feelings about Coach Montgomery as a coach. People can say what they want to say about stuff I've said. I've never said anything bad about Coach Montgomery as a human being or a man. He's only been a football coach, and you are what your record is. And, I'm not going to sit here and feel like I'm all down in the mouth about him being fired, but I do have, some empathy for him losing his job financially. Yeah, he's more than okay. He'll get another job. He'll go be a receivers coach somewhere, maybe a coordinator. So it ain't like he's not going to be employed or we got to buy him out. But anytime, I'm sure his dream was to be a head coach, and anytime your dream's now over, that's a tough situation for him and his family. More so concerned maybe about some of the assistant coaches. Guys like David Blackwell land on their feet. He'll be a coordinator somewhere else. The D-line coach. What's our D-line coach's name, Bubba? I can't think of it right now.
Rod Wright.
Yeah, he's already getting contacted out here by North Carolina. So he's going to land on his feet.
You know the connection there, of course. He was a player for Mack Brown at Texas. And, of course, when he was at Texas, he played in that unbelievable Rose Bowl game against USC when Vince Young was quarterback and they took down Matt Leinart and the Trojans. So he has that relationship with Mack Brown. I think he was an all Big 12 performer and had a cup of coffee in the NFL, as they say, and by all accounts is an excellent coach. So certainly wish him, as all the coaches, well.
Was Chizik the defensive coordinator at Texas when he played there?
I believe that's correct. I know Gene Chizik was obviously there under Mack Brown, but as far as him overlapping with Rod Wright's time on the defensive front, I'm not 100%.
Well, the reason I ask is there's a lot of speculation that Chizik is going to return to UNC as a defensive coordinator.
Okay.
So that would be interesting.
Just thinking back, of course, prior to going to Auburn, I guess it was, 2009 that they won the national title at Auburn?
Yeah, prior to going to Auburn.
And prior to that, he'd been the head coach at Iowa State. So just thinking back, the very beginning of his time there in Austin, Rod Wright's, that is, may have overlapped with Chizik, or he may have already been gone to Ames. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's hard to remember the exact time in there. But other assistants, I'm sure, look, most of our assistants, I should land on their feet. But that would be the bigger concern for me personally. And Look, the players, as I said on the earlier podcast, it's going to be tough for them, understandably so. That's their head coach. But the biggest thing they can do is just buy into whoever the next guy is. And like I say, we need to make sure we get somebody in here. We talked about this at nauseam on the earlier podcast, the Special Coach Mo Emergency podcast. But if it's Mike Houston, then God, I would thank Mike Houston to get those boys to buy in. I would think he's just, his personality just comes across as somebody, like Coach Ruff used to say, really recognizes real. And I would imagine players would have to love Mike Houston.
I totally agree. Just the interviews I've heard with him, what he said when he was on our show back in the summer in our preview for SCS, and then the other interviews I've watched on YouTube and those sorts of things. He seems very engaging and someone who would certainly develop that rapport with the players. And then he certainly seems like a player's coach. He has tremendous pregame speeches. And I know Coach Shank and Donnie Kay and all the other coaches, like Trip Weaver, that was up there prior to going to Western Carolina as a defensive backs coach. That's what they just had unbelievable things to say about Coach Houston.
Yeah, hopefully he'll end up in Greenville and not Charlotte. We'll touch on the other candidates here briefly before we move on. Butch Jones is still obviously a name we're hearing a lot. Butch Jones is tremendously successful with Cincinnati. Central Michigan, and had 2 9-win seasons in Tennessee, even though it didn't end well there. And then another name that came up tonight, according to ESPN, I can't remember which reporter it was, Bubba. I'm not sure if you saw it, but it was a reporter for ESPN. Mentioned Matt Canada as a possible candidate. And Matt Canada was the interim head coach of Maryland this year. What did they end up with, 6 wins, 6-6? Former offensive coordinator at Pittsburgh, LSU, and NC State. Was in a tough situation, thrown into the interim head coaching job at Maryland in about the toughest situations you could be in, with DJ Durkin being dismissed and the death of that player up there. And Matt Canada wouldn't be my top choice, but if things go south with Houston and Butch Jones, how would you feel about Matt Canada? I think he's a pretty good coach.
I agree. I think if we have to go that unproven head coach route, had to go with that high-profile coordinator, and you referenced all of the stops he's had. Of course, he was at LSU a year ago, and then prior to that, up at Pitt with Pat Narduzzi, and before that at NC State with Dave Doran. And that was kind of strange. They had a solid year on the offensive side of the ball before they let Canada go. But no, actually, if you recall, Kyle, I know Matt Canada's name was mentioned back before we hired Coach Mo. So
it was, and
that's one that back then guys kind of folks scoffed at that, yeah.
But Matt, of course, interim head coach in Maryland this year, so he has that 1 year of head coaching experience, and had some nice wins. Hadn't put together a staff before, but that 1 year of head coaching experience in that tough situation he was in, I wouldn't consider him as hiring a coordinator. He was the head coach the full year there. So, and I'm actually kind of surprised he didn't get the full time job. Do you remember, were they 6-6? Is that right? Or was it 7-5?
I'm not sure. I know it was in that ballpark. I think you may be right.
Yeah, and that's competing in the Big Ten and in a very tough situation. So it'll be interesting to see what other names come up. I think we'll find out this Mike Houston deal in a hurry, because I would assume after the game this week, JMU's playoff game, you're going to see Mike Houston make his decision, whether it's Charlotte, East Carolina, or staying at James Madison. I think we'll know that in a hurry.
I agree. I think that's something that we'll find out rather quickly. And as far as those other candidates, I know you mentioned Butch Jones, and Stephen Igoe has an excellent article he put out earlier this afternoon, three names to keep in mind, or three names you'll likely hear with the ECU search. And, of course, those were the ones we've already mentioned, but also Shane Beamer, who's, of course, had experience in not only Virginia Tech, but prior to that, South Carolina. And then after his time at Virginia Tech, last year he was on that Georgia staff that, of course, played in the college football playoff. And then this year he moved on to Oklahoma and is assistant head coach for Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, assistant head coach in charge of offense, I think it's his official title, and special teams coordinator. Here's just what you just mentioned, Brie Coase. But the thing about who he coached with, he coached under Steve Spurrier, Frank Beamer, Kirby Smart, and Lincoln Riley.
Right.
That's pretty salty. So you're going to look at assistants. He would be one that I would strongly consider. And just the ties to Oklahoma with Lincoln and Ruffin, and you know, I think that could build some bridges there between some of the fans that are still angry about Ruffin being dismissed with his ties to Ruffin at Oklahoma. But anyway, besides the head coach, we need an athletic director here at East Carolina, Bubba. And, you know, of course, we had some sources that we had that indicated that John Gilbert would be hired Wednesday, and we're still sticking with that. Obviously, he wasn't hired Wednesday, but John Gilbert will be the next athletic director at East Carolina. And there was another reporter that reported that around the same time we did, and we talked to him earlier today. Who was that, Bubba?
That was Brett Friedlander. Brett, of course, is a well-known sports writer in the state of North Carolina, and we had the opportunity. Dave sat down with him this morning and had an excellent conversation where they discussed the John Gilbert, the ECU as AD, and then also other topics such as a potential coaching search and who the candidates may have been. And this interview, folks, was conducted 3 hours prior to the news breaking that Coach Montgomery would be released from his duties as head football coach at ECU. So keep that in mind as you're listening to this interview with Brett Friedlander.
I want to bring our next guest in. He actually does great work. He actually is a journalist, and he's from the North State Journal and Bonesville.net, and that's Brett Friedlander. Brett, man, thanks for coming on.
Anytime.
I wanted to bring you on for several reasons. Obviously, I initially wanted to have you on because of all the stuff going on with the AD search at East Carolina, and there's also kind of other sports topics we could talk about as well, and maybe a potential coaching change at East Carolina. But then this week we had, when I was reaching out to you, the whole issue of we thought we had a AD hired, and you reported it, we reported it, and then nothing happened. So I wanted to bring you on to talk about a little bit of everything today when it comes to East Carolina, maybe some other stuff.
Anytime, that'd be fine.
I want to get your take on, because, and of course, message boards people are message boards people, but now we're not, you know, I'm not pretending to be a journalist, even though I've had 22 years of broadcasting experience, including at PTF and Raleigh, 5.5 years. So I've done a little bit of work when it comes to doing stories, and I just, we checked our sources. We found out, I guess, was it Tuesday? My days are running.
Yeah,
I think it was early
Tuesday
morning is when I started hearing stuff. And we waited like 12 hours before we even said anything, checking, double-checking, triple-checking, talking to different people. And then nothing happens at the Board of Trustees meeting. It's very frustrating. I just want to get your take on things and where you think we are right now at East Carolina.
Well, first of all, I'm not necessarily sure that nothing happened. Just don't think if something did happen, and clearly the board met for a reason, it's that they're not ready to announce anything just yet. Whether it's the dismissal of Scotty Montgomery, whether it's the hiring of an athletic director, it's one of those things where I would like to believe that they're waiting until after the NC State game on Saturday, and that maybe we'll get an announcement here of something on Sunday or perhaps Monday, the first business day after the football season is over. Everything I am told and everything I hear is that John Gilbert is still at the top of the list, and that the reason for the holdup here is on the Southern Mississippi end, that there may have been a delay in getting permission to talk to him. He has not formally interviewed yet, apparently, or hadn't as of yesterday, so I don't know if that happened yesterday or if it's going to happen today or tomorrow or whatever. But I still firmly believe in every source that I talk to is still convinced that Jeff Gilbert, John Gilbert, is the guy. So we shall wait and we shall see, and who knows, you know, how these workings go. Perhaps the Board of Trustees approved or discussed the framework of a contract. We don't know, and basically at this point it's all speculation. But I do believe that something happened. They agreed on something, and that it's just a matter of that they're not ready to announce it just yet.
And that would be typical of this board. So it is what it is, I guess. I wanted to ask you, as far as the whole Scotty Montgomery thing, there's talk that he could be back a fourth year. Do you think East Carolina could stand a fourth year of Scotty Montgomery, talking about financially speaking?
Well, here's the thing. If Scotty Montgomery is dismissed, I think whatever the buyout would be, I think the school would make up for it in ticket sales, that, you know, people coming back into the fold who have just decided they're not going to games because they don't like the way the program is going, and also in donations. So there's that. If they bring him back, I think you're going to see a lot of empty seats. I mean, people are frustrated right now. You bang your head against the wall enough times, and eventually you realize it hurts, and that's the reason you're banging your head, you know, and you stop doing it. So I think ECU is at that point. Now, I think Scotty Montgomery has the potential to be a really good coach at some point down the line, and I think that he's going to benefit from this experience. But I think that it's best for both him and for this program to go their separate ways. It's not like this program is devoid of talent. This is not like the end of the John Thompson era, where Skip Holtz had to come in and basically replenish the roster and deepen the talent pool. Scotty, for everything that he's not, has been a very effective recruiter, and there is talent on this roster. I mean, just look at the fact that Nate Harvey was the American Athletic Conference player of the defensive player of the year. You look at the potential you see in Holt Naylor's. There are a lot of other good young players that are starting to get playing time now. And so whoever comes in, I think that it's not a matter of rebuilding. It's a matter of just taking this program where it has been built now and taking it to the next level. And I think what you need is somebody who's an experienced head coach, somebody who's done it at this level and knows where to go now. And it's not a on-the-job training kind of situation the way it was with Scotty.
And the sad thing is, when this whole thing happened, when Ruff was fired, I stated the day that he was fired, whomever comes in is going to have a really difficult time, unless it's a proven head coach that, you know, a really big wow hire that Comfer has up his sleeve. And I think that Scotty, the one thing I will give him slack on is that he came into a really bad situation with Pirate Nation.
Absolutely. And the worst part of the situation wasn't the emotional thing with Ruff getting fired. It's that the program has moved to a different level. The American Athletic Conference is far superior to Conference USA, and I think the program was stocked with Conference USA type players. And I think that, you know, Ruff was going to have a hard time, and I think that whoever came in was going to have a difficult time because of the transition and because of the makeup of the roster. And it was at that point that you needed somebody who was an experienced coach who could kind of figure out how to piece things together while he was, you know, deepening the talent pool, while he was upgrading the level of players that were on the roster. And that didn't happen. And, you know, look, if you want to blame somebody for any of this, you have to blame Jeff Comfer, because it's one thing to want to make a change. And I understand why, you know, his reasoning behind getting rid of Ruff, although at the time I didn't agree with it. But, I mean, I see, you know, look, athletic directors want their guy there. And he wanted his guy there. But here's the thing. If you're going to make a change like that, have something in mind. Have a plan in mind. And I think he wanted his guy in there, but didn't know who it was. So he fired Ruff, and really, I think, just kind of winged it. And you know, if you're going to make that move, you definitely have to have somebody in place, somebody ready to go, sort of like UNC just did. When they got rid of Larry Fedora, well, there was no search because they knew what they were doing, and they had Mack Brown ready and put him right into place. That's a move that may be questioned down the road too, but at least they had a plan. And I don't think Jeff Cuffer had a plan. I think in his situation, he would have been better off keeping Ruff around another year while he decided who he wanted to replace him. But then again, if he didn't, then he ran the risk of Ruff succeeding and not being able to make the move. So that's where this all comes back to.
It really does. And it's a situation where we've got a lot of people who love Ruff. There's a lot of people who could relate to Ruff being from Lumberton, North Carolina. And Scotty's from, obviously, Shelby, so that was not a problem as far as that goes. But as far as being from Eastern North Carolina, an alum, you've coached here, had a lot of success. You're somebody who follows the ACC. I mean, he won two against Carolina, two against State, and two against Virginia Tech, 43 wins. And, yes, he didn't have the conference championships, but he did have the second 10-win season in school history, even though I know they could argue a watered-down Conference USA, but it was still a 10-win season with Shane Carden in 2013.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, Ruff really only had one bad year, and that one bad year, you can blame on Kurt Benkert and his injury. We don't know what would have happened if Kurt would have stayed healthy and been able to play. I mean, but you ended up with a JUCO transfer and basically a running back playing quarterback that year.
Right.
And, you know, I think the worst thing that happened that season was beating Virginia Tech in the rain with James Summers having such a big game, because I think Ruff kind of changed everything around. I mean, he changed the offense dramatically to suit James Summers, and I think it ended up coming back to bite him in the end. But, I mean, look, we can argue that all we want, whether it was a good move, whether it was a bad move, but, you know, whatever it was, it's put ECU in the position that it is now. And, you know, with the right hires, with the right decisions now, there's an opportunity to rebound from that and maybe kind of recover from whatever mistakes were made. But they've got to make the right hires, and, you know, we'll see how that goes. And to be honest with you, whatever the situation with the athletic director's hire is, it needs to be done pretty soon, because the with the new early signing date, the later you wait to hire a new athletic director, the less time a new coach will have to A, re-recruit the players that are already committed to the program, and B, to go out and try to find more good players. And if you wait long enough, you may not have the option to hire a new football coach. Now you may have to. And keep Scotty by default, because there just won't be time in this cycle to hire a new coach.
And that's one thing I was going to bring up is including myself, I like him. There's two guys that come to mind right off the bat, but Mike Houston is someone that's been offered a job at Charlotte. I suspect he'll take the job, but if you're Dave Hart, wouldn't you reach out to him? Because Mike Houston, actually, the funny thing is, Brett, Mike Houston has told people he wants to come to East Carolina, and he has East Carolina coaches. He's from North Carolina, so is his wife. They recruit North Carolina. It would be, a perfect fit, and it's just frustrating when you're a Pirate fan, someone who covers the team very closely, that Mike Houston hasn't been contacted as far as we know.
Well, and this is the problem with not having an athletic director, because, you know, look, Dave Hart could make a hire here. Okay, they could get rid of Scotty tomorrow, and Dave Hart could make a hire. But as we spoke about Jeff Comfort, athletic directors like to have their guy in there so that they know that they're on the same page as as the coach of their highest profile program. And you just can't do it. So the longer they wait, the fewer candidates that are going to be available. I mean, Mike Houston is just one of many people who I think who would do a good job. Another one is Elon's Kurt Cignetti is another one. And believe the rumors that you hear, there's a very high-profile coach who has some ties to, you know, John Gilbert, who could potentially come here. But the longer you wait, you know, the less people are going to be available, because these jobs are already being filled up. So it's imperative that they get this athletic director thing done ASAP. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of shocked that they waited as long as they did to form the committee and to actually go out and look.
Right.
Now, I know Dave Hart was doing the review of the program and everything, but at the same time, they could have been looking for an athletic director while he was doing it. With the extra 3 months that they gave him, I thought that when they gave that to him, my feeling was, okay, well, Dave Hart's going to eventually be the full-time
right.
athletic director. Well, it doesn't appear that's the case now. And so basically that's 3 months that they threw out the window, and now they're behind everybody. So they need to get this thing done, and they need it to get done quickly here.
Yeah, especially when the rumors we're hearing is probably the same thing you are, is that the ties with Dave Hart, John Gilbert, and Butch Jones all being at Tennessee, that Dave Hart has been working behind the scenes. And I know he's been working behind the scenes, but that's what everybody's been hearing. I don't know if that's true. Whenever we do a story or work on a story, we always say rumors if we know it's a fact or whatever. We're not trying to throw stuff against the wall, believe it or not.
I'm hearing them from parents of players. I'm hearing it from some folks from Tennessee. I mean, first of all, if that turns out to be the case, you want to talk about a home run hire. I mean, the guy won big at Cincinnati, and oh, by the way, that's this level. And you know, even though he had some problems off the field with players, he had 2 9-win seasons at Tennessee in the SEC. And so, you know, maybe he's learned from some of the mistakes that he made in handling some situations. You would hope. But from a football standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's exactly the kind of guy that can take the talent that is on this roster right now and maybe take it to the next level. Because, like I said, this is not a program that is devoid of talent. The last two recruiting classes were very good. And the one that, you know, it's coming up that if a new coach is in place, we'll have to try to protect is even better than the last two, according to the rankings. So somebody like that could come in and really make a positive impact right away. I mean, look what happened at Central Florida. You know, they went from 0-12 to undefeated, in 3 years?
Yeah.
So the right person in this league, and I think with the base that has been built here, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, I'm not saying that they can go to undefeated, but I would say, you know, they could become a bowl team quite quickly
right.
with the right leadership.
That's what it's funny that you said that. I said that yesterday at practice, talking to folks that, and if you look at the schedule's easier next year.
Yep.
I mean, my God, no offense to our friends listening from Gardner-Webb, but if you can't beat, if you're East Carolina and you can't beat Gardner-Webb next year, you probably want to cut the whole program. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean or sarcastic. I really am serious. Like, that's on the table. You've got Old Dominion. They're not an easy out, but you feel like you could beat them. You do have Virginia Tech and NC State on non-conference, but then you have Tulsa, Navy, which is a little down, and SMU will be on the other side next year.
And keep in mind, NC State without Ryan Finley and his two best receivers, NC State's going to have some stuff to figure out next year as well. And, Virginia Tech is not going to a bowl this year. I think they may have still have one game to play, but you know, they're basically a 500 team this year. So, you're right. It's there, but you need the right person to put the people in the right places. And you know who knows, maybe Scotty is at that point where this program's ready to turn the corner and it's just a matter of time, but you just can't take that chance. I mean, you have to go
yeah.
with something that you feel like, you know, gives you the best opportunity to maximize the situation, and really it's a crapshoot with Scotty, because you're basically going on hope at this point, that you hope he's grown enough to figure out how to win some of these games, to put the right guys in the right positions. And but again, it's that same sense of banging your head against the wall. At what point do you stop doing it because you realize, oh, that's why my head hurts?
And before we let you go, I just want to mention something I thought about last night, is the fact that if it's true about Mike Houston going to Charlotte, you have Mike Houston. Let me back up. There's 7 Division I schools in North Carolina. So you have Mike Houston at Charlotte. You have Scott Satterfield, at least right now as we speak. I would think he's coming back at Appalachian State.
Keep an eye on the Louisville situation there.
Okay. All right, well, there we go. So he may not be in North Carolina anymore, but there's him for right now. You look at Wake Forest, look at the great job Dave Paulson's done. You have David Cutcliffe at Duke, which is like taking the bad news Bears and turning that football program. That's
yep.
the way. I'm from Durham originally, so I know that program extremely well. NC State, Dave Doran, and you bring back Mack Brown. And East Carolina, no offense, but it's Scotty Montgomery. And I think that there's a lot of fans, I'll tell you right now, Brett, that I've talked to in the last couple of days, especially with this whole Mike Houston thing, if that's true, that says, hey, oh, my God, now Charlotte is going to, like, surpass us, not only in student population, but also with enrollment, but also with the football program.
And I think Charlotte's on a future schedule. Don't they have a certain schedule with Charlotte coming up in the near future?
That's correct.
So, yeah, that would not be a good thing. But so, this is a very pivotal moment here in HBCU football history. And how the next few days or the next couple of weeks are handled will really, I think, determine maybe going into the next decade. So, yeah, this is a very important moment. And I understand and I appreciate the fact that they're taking their time to make sure that they do the right thing. But, again, you can't take too much time here.
No doubt. I wanted to ask you how people can follow you as far as I know you do. I look at your work on Bowlensville and obviously North State Journal. And also I follow you on Twitter as well. How can people do all that?
Well, on Twitter, that's probably the best way to follow me because I post basically all my work there. It's at @BFriedACC. That's @BFriedACC. North State Journal, you can go directly to that at nsjonline.com/sports. And we've got some really good writers. Sean Crest is also with us, and Corey Lavalette. And we try to do our best at covering the entire state. And it's tough with three of us, but we give it a good run.
And you do well. By the way, I wanted to let you folks know, I love your headline for Mack Brown coming back to North Carolina. Mack to the future. Classic. One of my favorite headlines of all time. So I got to give you props for that.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you so much for being on with us.
Anytime.
Hey, what a great job by Brett and David. You know, like they were saying, John Gilbert still sounds like the choice of Dave Hart at athletic director. I'm going to stick with it until we're proven wrong.
I was talking to Jamie Arrington on the To the Top Talk podcast earlier, and Jamie said that all indications down in Hattiesburg were that John Gilbert would be moving on to ECU, and just as we reported. So I don't know exactly what the holdup is, and just maybe some I's getting dotted and T's being crossed and that sort of thing, but in the process playing out. But everything we're hearing is still pointing to John Gilbert being the next director of athletics at East Carolina.
Yeah, I think it may be a case of, as indicated earlier, there wasn't a formal interview done. It was a lot of talk between Gilbert and Dave Hart. He probably had agreed to take the job, and it just wasn't a formally done interview yet. We had, like you said, some T's to cross, I's to dot, but everything is still pointing to that. We'll see. If we're wrong, we're wrong, but it certainly was not us trying to mislead or just be first. We legitimately had sources indicating that it was imminent he would be named athletic director, but if somebody else ends up getting the job as AD, then we'll admit we were wrong. We got high school playoffs going on, Bubba. You've been a high school coach and you're a middle school coach right now, so we're quite familiar with high school football in the state of North Carolina, so I'll let you take it from there.
Yes, I love this time of year. Nothing like playoff football, no matter what level. And on the high school level, it's the third round. And of course, things got pushed back due to the hurricanes that our state sustained early in the fall. But back in August, we had our excellent high school football preview. And the first part of that was with Chris Hughes of NC Preps. He does Carolina Preps. He does such a tremendous job, and we're able to have Chris back on. He was gracious enough to come on with Dave and discuss the third round matchups. And we're going to take it to that interview with Chris Hughes of CarolinaPreps.com right now.
Well, being North Carolina high school football playoff time and the third round coming up, we wanted to have our next guest, one of our most popular guests ever on the history of this podcast, is Chris Hughes from Carolina Preps. Chris, thanks so much for coming back.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and as always, it's great to get on and talk sports, but especially high school football, and you're right, this is the time of year to do it. A lot of exciting things happening in the playoffs.
No doubt. It has been what a start. First of all, the hurricane, I want to set things straight for folks. It's really, I guess I'm kind of like Rain Man, Chris, when it comes to sports. I have not like a lot of things, but that's one thing I have like in my mind. All right, the championships should be on this time. And coming up right, it took about the week before the playoffs started that I realized, oh, that's right, they pushed back the playoffs a week. So it's actually, for everybody listening right now, if you're wondering, the championship games are moved back 1 week, correct?
Correct. So this upcoming week typically and traditionally would have been the semifinals, the regional finals. But because of the two different hurricanes that affected us, it did move it back a week, which now is going to push the championships into the same day as the traditional Shrine Bowl, the Carolinas, which pits North Carolina and South Carolina All-Stars against one another. So those two events will be on the same day.
So if you're a player, that's so I guess the player is going to have to miss the Shrine Bowl if they're in the...
Yeah, I think there's absolutely no circumstance whatsoever that a player would opt out of playing in a school's championship game to play in a meaningless all-star game when it comes. And I don't mean the Shrine Bowl is meaningless, but, you know, I can't think of a player that would ever give up a team championship over that.
No, I just hate that. That's a shame because it's a tremendous honor, and obviously state championship is way more important, but that's I hadn't got that far to think about the Shrine Bowl, but that's why we have you. You're the expert, and I'm not. I'm just a guy that's lucky to be in the same room with you. But
it's okay. And the only reason I brought it up is I do the TV broadcasting for ESPN of the Shrine Bowl, as I have for the past 6 years. And it's kind of a bummer for me because while I enjoy broadcasting that game, it kind of is just tough on me because I'd much rather be at the state championships.
Right. Before we get a deep dive, I know that you mentioned I want to talk about Larry Fedora for fans that I know you work closely. I saw your tweet with Coach Fedora. Can you talk about from the aspect of as far as high school recruiting, and I know with the programs, is this going to hurt North Carolina with as far as recruitment? Because every time we turn with East Carolina, one of the things – I'll just say this for the inside of East Carolina. There's some fans that love Coach Montgomery so much, and they say if there is a coaching change in East Carolina, it's going to hurt recruiting. We know it hurts some, but what about with North Carolina? Do you think this hurts the upcoming recruiting class?
No, not at all. And I don't think a coaching change would hurt recruiting at ECU either, just for the record. But I do know Coach Fedora well. I've run a lot of events between Carolina Preps and the University of North Carolina, and I've just interacted a lot with him over the years. And I hate to see him go. And I appreciate everything he did for our state. But football's a business, and especially at the collegiate level, if you don't win, you're out. In terms of recruiting, I thought Coach Fedora did some great things. Previously, he had Gunnar Brewer as his recruiting coordinator, who was the receivers coach, who left and has now assumed the position of the Philadelphia Eagles. And I thought that hurt recruiting slightly this past year, although Tommy Thigpen, a former Carolina player, took over the recruiting coordinating position. And I think that they've been able to somewhat maintain. But with Fedora going out, I don't think it's going to hurt the recruiting calls because if all the reports are true and Mack Brown is hired as the next coach, he owned Carolina recruiting and he did a great job of recruiting the Tidewater area of Virginia and really was just dominant in his tenure. And if he is the head coach, as it's kind of being speculated, I think that can only help the recruiting calls for the Tar Heels.
And another thing, too, is that with the as far as the Southwest is concerned, he knows a lot of contacts. And that's one thing I've learned about what I do know about recruiting is about relationships. And I know that he has, I would think, still a really good ties there with the folks in Texas and Oklahoma and all the places there in the Southwest.
He does, and I think that could only help Carolina. And let's not forget that he played his college football at Florida State. So, I mean, he always owned the state of Florida recruiting as well. But, you know, Mac Brown, he's on TV, ESPN, every Saturday doing college football analyst work. He is a national figure. People all
right.
over the country know him. So that can only just – the only positives can come from that aspect in the game of recruiting in college football.
It's going to be interesting to see. And, of course, across the state, we don't know about East Carolina. We know about Charlotte with the coaching change. And do you think with Carolina, if that's true with Mac Brown, a lot of people were going to talk about Scott Satterfield, but he still could be up for other positions to leave Appalachian State.
He could be. I think that he would probably stick around another year. He's got a son who is a junior running back at Watauga High School, which is right there. So I could kind of see him sticking around one more season. I know that he's very close with his son and with that football program there in Boone, being the high school program. I think that he is there for another year just to continue to solidify that resume and just everything he's done. I do think that in time he could certainly be due for an ACC or another bigger Power 5 conference job, but I don't think that it's going to hurt him by staying because, you know, unlike maybe in a big conference right now where you could see, you know, you go to NC State and while the Wolfpack are riding high today, the margin of error is much thinner and they could easily high today, down tomorrow. I think in that conference in the Sun Belt and what they've got going on at Appalachian, I think the Mountaineers are only going to continue to rise. So I don't think there's a risk of him only having a 5-7 season.
And it's kind of like the analogy, I hate to use it, and I'm not disrespecting Appalachian State when I say this, but it's kind of like a big fish in a small pond because he's loved there so much. He is in a conference, like you said, that it's easier to win and the Sun Belt, even though there's some tremendous teams. But when you look at all the talent that's at the ACC level, my God, it's, you know, David Cutcliffe with Duke at 7-5 is, it sounds like not a big season, but it is considering all the talent that's in the ACC now and football.
Sure, sure. Totally agree with that statement. And again, you know, it's almost, it's not quite NFL parity level yet to where the margin of error is so razor thin that you can go from being 12-4 to 4-12 in just a matter of one season. But in those bigger as the SEC and the ACC, as those conferences go, where everybody is good, it doesn't take a lot to fall from the top, from the mountaintop down to the bottom.
Well, I could talk to you for a million years about football, period, about college football, but we want to have you on about the playoffs. Where do you want to start? I know there's a lot of games still left, and I'll let you take the lead because, again, you're the expert, and we want to have you on and see what this is going to drop on probably Friday. So we want to see what your thoughts are about the games.
Well, obviously heading into the third round now of the high school playoffs here in North Carolina, we've got some tremendous, tremendous games, some great matchups. We've got a couple games that are third-round games that I think are semifinal caliber, like fourth-round caliber games. And one game in the 1A, the 1AA, for example, that I think probably is the state championship game or probably would have been the state championship-level game in the 1AA this Friday night when North Stanley travels down to Tarboro. Of course, Tarboro is the defending state champions, and North Stanley – has been on that rise and has really shown that they're a dominant program going into this game. They're 11-2 on the road against Tarboro, And I think that is a state championship caliber game Friday night. Both teams are just dominant in all phases of the game. They're not typical 1A teams either. I think both of these programs would win consistently, even at the 3A levels this year. And even in the instance for Tarboro, I think they could probably still be an active 4A team with their 1A numbers. They're just that good of a program.
I tell you what, I know that program very well. One of my good friends a couple of my friends went to that school. But I saw the very first game when they played Washington County, and it's not even close. When I say score, but not only the score, but just the program they have there in Tarboro. Of course, they've been known for many years, but it seems like that, in my opinion, over the last, I don't know, 6 or 10 years or more, they just built a program that is just, I know it's 1A, but it could easily be a lot. If you took away that classification, the way they play at a much higher level.
I mean, absolutely. Coach Jeff Craddock is one of the best in the state. I've known him for years. And you think of it, a school with about 500 students, give or take. Actually, I think it might be more closer to maybe 550, 560. I think they've got about 260 to 270 boys in the school. And of those 250, 260 boys, about 110 to 115 of them play football. So the participation and the numbers on that team are just tremendous. And to be a 1A school with over 100 persons in the program speaks volumes. Because in this day and age, with participation numbers where they are, you don't even have a lot of 4A number schools with 100-player counts anymore. So I think that speaks a lot for what Coach Craddock and what that community of Tarboro has done in creating that program.
Well, it's like my town of Williams. There's not a lot to do there, Chris, in Tarboro. So no offense to my friends there for the Vikings, but it's definitely a good thing to keep the boys out of trouble.
Absolutely.
I really like Tarboro this year. I've liked them I told you that before the season. They were one that there just seems to be the perennial favorite, especially coming out of, don't you think, out of the East, they'll be back to another state championship. It looks like it.
No, I think that I believe they'll be the state champions again. I mean, I do think that this game Friday night against North Stanley is going to be a good game. I think that it will I do give North Stanley a chance of winning it. I don't think that I would tip the scales completely in the Vikings' favor, but it's going to be a good game. But on the flip side, on the other side of the bracket, you've got another big game Friday night as East Surrey travels across county to face their arch rivals, Mount Airy. That was a 3-point game, a 31-28 game, the last game of the regular season. Of course, it was last year that Tarboro defeated Mount Airy in the 1AA state championship game. So, I mean, very well may have a rematch here in a few weeks. So we'll see how things shake out on that 1AA West bracket. But we've got a big game Friday night. The Cardinals, again, it's an in-county rivalry, once again playing Mount Airy. And that should kind of, once that game plays out, that should give us a little bit better insight as to what the championship game will look like here in a couple weeks. But I think right now, if I was a betting man, I still think it's going to be a rematch of Mount Airy and Tarboro.
And it's, I tell you what, in the western part of the state and certainly the eastern part of the state there, well, across the state of North Carolina, the football is just, I don't think we get the credit. We could do a whole podcast on that, Chris, with you following it so closely, but I don't think we get the credit we deserve with the athletes. Everybody thinks of North Carolina as a basketball state, which it is, but I think there's a lot of great football talent as well, and I think you see that from time to time. In fact, if we had no talent here, there wouldn't be all the coaches coming to from all over the place to recruit here.
Right, right. And you stated that very well. And you mentioned the western part of the state and the eastern part. I know that you're in the eastern. I'm kind of more in the central, but I've got roots in the west. And I've coached in the east. I've coached in Fayetteville. So, I mean, obviously I've seen every side of football there is in this state. And the one thing I've always liked to say is that I feel like there's more talent in the eastern part of the state. There's typically more speed and some better skill players in the eastern part of the state. But on the flip side, I think that Western football is a much better brand of football in North Carolina. And there's a couple reasons behind that. In the east, again, you've got more skill talent, but the east tends to be a little bit more rural. You've got some more directional styles, smaller community schools. But the west, granted, there's more people in the western part of North Carolina, and a lot of that's attributed to the interstate systems and just how the major cities fell many, many years before you and I came around here. So I think that your greater population bases have a more variety of things to offer. You know, one thing that people don't consider as to why the West might be better in football than the East is I think the West has better coaching. Now, I'm not saying there's not good coaches in the East, but you think of your better, more suburban areas, your counties that touch maybe some more populated areas, better terrain. You know, you got your beautiful rolling hills with nice forest and, you know, nicer community or middle-class cities that seem to be a lot more frequent in Western North Carolina. And things like that, being close to some bigger cities, attracts wives to want to be there, which in turn is where the husbands are kind of drawn. And that's why a lot of your more established coaches, I think, are drawn to go to the Western towns. And also in the West, for whatever reason, it seems to be a lot of your more established rivalries and just a lot of schools maybe with some older money. And because of that, it just has always seemed to be this cycle that builds those schools versus maybe your outlying rural areas. So I've always thought that the West has maybe bigger kids, especially in the mountain areas, and they certainly have some better stadiums and maybe some older money involved with them. But I feel like the West has better coaching and the East has better talent. And I know that kind of is a roundabout way of answering that question, but it's just something that I've observed over many, many years.
I wanted to ask some other games that with the time we have left. What got another 10 minutes or so? What other games come to mind? Because I know that this time of year, one thing else that comes to mind is this time of year, anybody can win. And just when you hear the term any given Sunday, well, when it comes to the playoffs, it's a completely different season, and teams you think are going to win don't always win. So,
yep, I agree. And to kind of put a wrap on 1A, a team that has been winning despite a poor record, really two of them, Polk County is going to face Starmount on Friday night. That's in the 1A in the Western brackets. So that's kind of a game to look out for in the 1A ranks. And also the other big game in the 1A, two teams that have kind of meant to be there in the West is Murphy and Mitchell. So that's kind of another one to kind of keep an eye on. And then in the 1AA, for the 1A East, Gates County and Pamlico County. So those are two programs that continue to win. But as we move up to the 2A ranks, just talking about some of the absolute best games this upcoming Friday night, I think we've got a lot to look at. But let's look at the eastern part of the state again with the 2A. You've got Kinston, who's right there in eastern North Carolina, making the trip up to Elizabeth City, the far northeastern corner of North Carolina. The Vikings are undefeated, 12-0, going to take on another undefeated program in Northeastern. I think Northeastern has probably the most talent of any 3 or 2A school in North Carolina, coached by Coach Antonio Moore. They got Travion Freshwater,
right,
who is one of the best recruits in the state. And this is a team in Northeastern that has played D.H. Conley in Greenville and won. They played a 4A power in Norview in Norfolk, Virginia, and won. They've just annihilated everyone on their schedule. So that's one of the premier games in the 2A ranks. You got another one, again, in the eastern bracket where you've got one of these western schools that got stuck in the eastern bracket. So you've got North Davidson traveling to Pine Tops to face Southwest Edgecombe. And another big one just kind of in that 2A ranks is Hertford County, an eastern school that's going to the west to play Ledford. So that's kind of a big game in the 2A rank, just kind of to make sure we're encompassing all the classifications. But if you really want to talk about the best of the best games in North Carolina, you got to look at some of these big 3A and 4A matchups for this Friday night. Jacksonville taking on Eastern Alamance, Charlotte Catholic and Hunter Huss, Durham Hillside and Cleveland out of Clayton.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's just so many of these huge games.
There really are. I tell you, the when you were talking about, you know, the brand of football and the different schools, another thing that comes to mind as far as when you were talking about the coaching, over your time here, how much has the game improved as far as the coaching? In other words, maybe the coaches that are moving here to
incredible. And the reason why the game's improved, you know, back when I played high school ball 28 years ago, 27 years ago, you know, and coaches from the era that led me in the 80s and 90s, you know, those coaches learned from guys who were brought up in the 1950s and some old school, you know, the single wing, the straight tee, the wing tee. So football was a lot different brand of sport in those days. And today you've got so many coaching clinics and so many coaching resources available, whether it be online clinics, different clinics that coaches go to throughout the off season, and just the skill level involved in the schematic side of it and putting together these schemes or player development. It's just so much more developed than anything that's ever been in the past. Computer softwares that help the coaches out with incorporating the film work into the X's and O's. It's just amazing how intellectual this game has become.
I know one coach came to mind, and I know is obviously Nate Connor. When you mentioned Conley, he's somebody that I really noticed when you were talking about the different era of coaches. He's somebody that really has not only really good at developing talent, but he really is able, speaking of developing talent, he's able to take the scheme and the stuff that he's using there at Conley, locally in Pitt County, to where there a guy like a Holton Ahlers can start as a freshman.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Absolutely. And I certainly would say that Nate Connor is one of the more cerebral coaches out there. Incredibly intelligent, smart guy, knows scheme. He's got a great offensive scheme and how someone's always going to be open, whether it's with the different crossing routes and the passing route, to where he's able to almost visualize what the defenders are going to do and can always have some guy that's uncovered. And so much of that is in his film study and what he's able to do. And, of course, just in player development and finding players. I mean, Holton Ahlers is just an incredible athletic talent. But in the old days, he very well may have been a left guard or a tight end or a fullback.
Right.
But in today's game, you know, Coach Connell was able to identify a player of that level and fit him into the system and build the system around him. So, you know, it's not just the X's and O's ability. It's the ability to understand the talent and make sure that you're putting each individual piece in a place where they succeed. It's really like a big chessboard.
It really is, and he's somebody that I've coached a little bit, but I'm never going to coach against guys like him. I would be – my poor team would be slaughtered probably in the first quarter. But what else – what other games come to mind? I know we were – I'm sorry, I digress. But
well, no, it's okay. I mean, I could literally spend 3 hours here talking football with you. There's so many big games that we could break down, and I'm trying to kind of give you the Cliff Notes version of some of the big ones. Kind of moving up into the 4A ranks, we've got some big ones. In Wilmington, you've got Wilmington Hoggard. The Vikings are hosting Pinecrest out of Southern Pines. That's a big third-round game. The winner of that game is likely going to go face the two-time defending 4AA champions in Wake Forest. Although Wake Forest has a tough game against Leesville Road, who they only beat 31-19 earlier in the season. So Wake Forest has a 45-game winning streak. We'll see if they'll be able to keep that winning streak alive and make it to another state championship game. The west side of the 4AA bracket, you've got a huge one down in Rockingham, Richmond County High School. The Raiders are going to play host to Myers Park. Myers Park defeated Butler last week. Again, got to remember that whole Raider magic dynamic to this 2018 season. To anyone not familiar, Richmond County has the team of the eights. And by that, I mean every year, dates back to when they were Rockingham High School in 68, whether it's Richmond County in 78, 88, 98, and 08 have won a state championship game. And every year that ends in eight. So they definitely seem to have one of those teams this year. They got a great sophomore quarterback in Caleb Hood. All the stars seem to be aligning for the Raiders to put together another championship run. They got a big one Friday night against Myers Park on the other side of that bracket. Mallard Creek, you know, one of the familiar names that has been so dominant in the 4AA landscape. They got beat by Huff High School. Huff is going to play Vance on Friday night up there in Charlotte. So that's kind of giving us a better look of how the 4AA playoffs are looking. The small 4A, you got Scotland County, who, despite a lot of injuries and a lot of setbacks, have fought and clawed their way forward in these playoffs. They're going to go to Fayetteville. They're going to play on the road at Pine Forest. And the other side of that bracket is Southview and 71st, two other Fayetteville teams. So it looks like one way or the other, the 4A championship, at least from the eastern side, is going to go through Fayetteville.
It's when you get to that level, it almost there's a lot of schools that could easily be – people hate when people like me say this, but the brand of football is so great at that level. They can almost be like a small college. It really is amazing.
Sure. I mean, it certainly and it's so competitive at that 4A, 4AA level, and so many of those athletes will go on to play at the collegiate level. Now, granted, most of them won't be at Power 5 BCS-style schools that we see on TV, although some will, but so many of those players will end up at schools, whether at the NAIA D3, D2 level, schools like Fayetteville State, A&T, North Carolina Central, Lenoir Ryan, Catawba, Wingate, so many schools like that, hundreds of these players will end up at those schools. So they'll have an opportunity not only to continue their football career, but to get an education through football, which is so much more important.
Really, it really is. What other games come to mind for you? Are there any more that pop out?
Well, just to kind of get back on it, in the 3A ranks, you got a rematch between Greensboro Dudley and Southeast Guilford. Southeast Guilford defeated Eastern Guilford 9-3 in an overtime game Friday night. So they'll get a chance to play Dudley for the second time. We'll see how that game turns out. Also in the 3A ranks up in Boone, we talked about Appalachian, Watauga High School. They're going to play host to Weddington High School. So that's going to be a big game. Kind of skipping around the state, let's look back down to southeastern North Carolina. Southwest Onslow, they're going to be home against Wallace Rose Hill. Both those programs have won a ton of state championships. Wallace Rose Hill is the defending 2A champions. So that's going to be an interesting one that we need to kind of keep an eye on. I'm kind of skimming through my list right here. Havelock, number one team in 3A. They're going to play Terry Sanford, another Fayetteville school. So that's a very big game. That's one that we definitely need to keep an eye on.
Well, I tell you, it's amazing with all the games. You think about certain games, and then you brought up the western part of the state, a lot of the games I'd forgotten about, and then even some of the eastern teams, but there's so many great games. And one thing I want to mention before we let you go is how can people follow you? I know it's carolinapreps.com, but I want people to follow it. You've been a great resource for us for the podcast to kind of keep up what's going on with high school football. So how can people, I want to pass that along for folks listening right now.
Absolutely. And thank you. You certainly go to carolinapreps.com. We've been one of the leaders in covering North Carolina high school football for over a decade now. So by all means, we've got historical information that you can go research your team. Obviously, social correspondence back and forth with other fans in the state via our forums. We put out weekly power rankings. Just a lot of different features on there. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at ChrisHughesCT. We've got a CarolinaPreps.com Facebook page and a fan interactive page on Facebook. So, I mean, just type in Carolina Preps and whatever social platform it is you like to follow, and you're bound to find us on there. And we appreciate all the support out there. We it's certainly a lot of fan-driven content, so we appreciate the fans that get on there and yield their and lend their knowledge of their particular area to other fans in the state and just, again, continue to make high school football important here in North Carolina.
And, Chris, hopefully we can get you back on the next couple weeks because it's getting down to the nitty-gritty and love to get your take on the games.
Hey, I eat, breathe, and sleep high school football, so anytime you want to get me on, I'm a willing participant, and I appreciate the opportunity.
And what a great interview from Chris Hughes with Dave, doing a great job interviewing him, as always. Chris is a guy that, you know, when he gets to going talking about North Carolina high school football, he can talk about it all day. He's real passionate, and you can tell his genuine love for high school football in the state of North Carolina.
No doubt. It's evident his passion. And I was talking to him a little bit yesterday off the air, and he was saying that he's probably going to make it down to the Richmond County game this week. Of course, that's an extremely tradition-rich program down in the Rockingham, Hamlet area, and it's going to be interesting to see if they can make that run to a state championship. But another side note on that, of course, former ECU head coach, the late Ed Emery, was also head coach at Richmond County High School after his time in Greenville.
That's right. OEZE Ed Emery did a great job at Richmond County after his time here at ECU. Did a good job here. That was, you know, another time where we fired an alum. Very similar situation to what happened with Ruffin, really. But anyway, what else we got, Bubba? We have more interviews. I'm cracking my brain here. I don't have the format just in front of me.
In addition to talking some football, and we're going to kind of shift gears now. We're going to transition to ECU basketball. Been a last tough couple of outings for the Pirates. Hard fault. I think it was 55-52 loss to High Point and Tubby Smith. And then most recently, we suffered in that loss down at UNC Wilmington on the other night. And so we fell behind 24 points in that game and then battled back and cut it to 7 before falling to the Seahawks. There was no quit, but just UNC Wilmington came out red hot, to say the least. That's an understatement early on in that first 10 to 12 minutes of the game. And I think they, after 12 minutes, were something like 6 out of 7 from 3. And so we were playing catch up the entire night and just couldn't quite complete the comeback. But what another unbelievable outing for Jaden Gardner. He had his third double-double, and he had 30 and 15. So he's had 30 and 10, 28 and 17. And now 30 and 15, just an unbelievable promise that the freshman is showing.
That's incredible. If you can get Sean Williams scoring like he was last year and get Gardner to keep that up. I mean, at some point when we quit turning the ball over so much, there's going to be some wins coming down the road.
Yeah, that's what it's certainly frustrating to lose any time, and then especially those in-state matchups like High Point and UNC Wilmington that we've traditionally struggled in down through the years. But I'm certainly not frustrated with Coach Dooley and this regime whatsoever. I think anybody with an understanding of the situation knew that there would be some speed bumps or growing pains, so to speak, this year, and we're just missing some of the pieces that we need. But I continuously expect us to see improvement throughout the season.
Yeah, it's not going to be an overnight fix. Coach Dilley's doing a good job. He's got a good staff, and they'll keep getting better as the season goes on. What we have coming up was Friday night, Appalachian State.
Yeah, that's what we have. App State. And they have an extremely challenging non-conference schedule. They've already played the likes of Alabama, Purdue, Wichita State. And so, needless to say, they're battle-tested. They have the likes of Bonchad and Shabazz and quite the name and also quite the basketball player. He's someone who I've seen play on a couple of occasions, and he can certainly light it up. And then they also have his first name escapes me, but his last name's Forrest, and I believe it was his dad played at Georgia Tech. So he's someone else to keep an eye on if you're going to be able to make it out to Minji's or follow the game on Friday night. But as far as our interviews, earlier we talked a little bit about Jaden Gardner, and Dave was out at practice today in media availability at the Smith-Williams Center, and he caught up with not only Jaden Gardner but also starting point guard Sean Williams, as well as the head basketball coach of the Pirates, Joe Dooley.
Here with Jaden Gardner, big. Obviously, I had to practice right before the game tomorrow. Jaden, you've been, like I know you said, was a beast mode. I heard you say in the press press conference afterwards, after the game. Talk about that beast mode. I'd love to have some of that. It's awesome. I love your play.
It's just something that's been catered on for me since eighth grade. People have just been calling me and just noticed that my motor. I just pride myself in my motor and playing hard at all times. So that's what I try to do. I go out to try to help my team win, help my coaches win, and see something the fans to see, something they can be excited for when they come watch the games.
Jaden, I was talking to a guy that was actually a really big football player here. He said you're more like a football player. He was really shocked. He has season tickets here. He said you're more like a linebacker. He's really, really impressed with the way that you move up and down the floor.
Well, people were trying to make me play football in high school, but I just wanted to stick to basketball and like so I can be like 100% focused in it. So that's how I was.
One thing I noticed about you is I was told years ago by a coach about when you see that guy with the ball, it's dangerous because you know something, especially if you're the opposing team, something's going to happen. You obviously are a winner because when it seems like when the chips have been down and the games have been close, you really want that basketball.
Yeah, I pride myself in trying to be one of those type of guys. I just like the moment. I'm a gamer. So I like those type of moments.
What do you guys have to do to beat Appalachian State coming up tonight?
We got to play good defense. We got to trust our offense, share the ball, and just execute. Come down, listen to Coach Dooley because he's been coaching us hard and doing all the right things and telling us all the right things. Just got to listen and execute.
Hopefully you can get a win tonight against Appalachian State. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
With Sean Williams now, and Sean, I know their big game tomorrow night, Appalachian State. It's obviously with the in-state rival, and we've had some good games over the years. What do you think about going into tomorrow night?
Like Jaden said earlier, it's just another team we got to get prepared for. We got to execute, make sure we do everything right so we can get the W.
It's obviously one thing that's impressive to me is with a young team, you guys gelling together, a new coach obviously with Coach Dooley. There's been spurts where you guys have looked really good. How do you guys feel in practice?
We feel good in practice. Just like I said, we got to execute. Sometimes we have mental problems. We just got to key in and lock in and do everything right.
The future feels bright. What about some other guys on the team? Have you seen other guys that really have stepped up this year?
My guy Jay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Jay. He having big games. We got to pick it up. We got to help him out. Everybody's playing. We playing hard, playing great. We just got to knock down shots, and it's going to come. We got to execute. It's going to come.
One thing I've noticed is watching this team here and obviously on TV is the fact you guys are hustling, diving for balls. The energy for this team has been amazing this year.
That's something Coach Dooley prides. That's something Coach Pride. What am I trying to say? Oh, my goodness. Hold on. Redo. Can you redo that, please? Coach Dooley, that's something that he teaches us to do, just play hard all the time. No matter what happened, any mistakes, we just got to keep playing hard and get the fans what they deserve.
And one final question, what about the fans this year? Have you noticed a big difference in the energy from the crowds? I have so far, but I want to get your take as a player. What's it like being on the floor?
I love it. I love the energy. Everybody's so supportive. The new era, of course. Everybody wants to see us win, and that's what we're trying to deliver, some wins.
All right, good luck to you. And I know it's a big game in the Appalachian State, obviously being tonight. And good luck to you.
Appreciate that.
Coach, how's kind of the response been from the Wilmington trip? And obviously you have a few home games this weekend. And what's that transition been like for your guys?
Well, I think we were able to get back and got some work in yesterday. We'll get some work in today. A little bit different style of play than we just faced. So, relatively quick turnarounds. You got to incorporate some things for Sunday into today's and yesterday's practice. And I thought originally we weren't very focused yesterday, and then we really picked it up towards the latter part of it. Really picked it up.
Like Dorothy said, there's no place like home. I know the crowds have been really good. How do you feel about the fans it definitely makes a huge difference when we can pack the arena.
There's no doubt. I mean, I like we've talked about, we need help. I mean, with our fans, and we've got to put a product out there. But I think when we have people in there, and it's a great home atmosphere, and hopefully we give the fans something to cheer about. But I also think we need to do our job, and we're trying.
As far as Appalachian State, what do you know about them, and what do the players have to do to beat Appalachian State?
Very good guard play. Forrest and Muhammad are terrific, really, really capable scorers. Played a tough schedule. They've already played Purdue. They've already played Wichita State. Already played a very good Ball State team, making 10 three-pointers a game, which is, shooting 52% from three. So we've obviously, prior to the Wilmington game, had really defended the three-point line very well. I mean, we were at 289, which is statistically great, and we need to make sure we get back on the line and get them off the line, also guard them one-on-one, because they do a lot of things where they create space and try to make one-on-one plays.
There's so many different teams in this state. How important are these games? They're not conference games, but you're trying to kind of build your niche and your culture here.
Well, I think the big thing is really, I don't think these games impact recruiting at all in that regard. I think that the big thing is really getting out and developing relationships and finding guys that fit what we want to do and fit the way we play, and also being able to look for, not just this year's recruiting class, but forward for next year's recruiting class and the following years of who we want to have here.
Coach, I think the record doesn't reflect the hustle, and obviously I've always heard that the style of play is obviously dictated by the coach and the way the coach is, I guess, plural, with the great rock star staff you have. Have you noticed a different intensity for this team based on what you've been teaching them in practice?
I think there's a number of things. I think the guys have tried hard for the most part. I think there's some spurts. I've always heard that there's some games you don't play as well or as poorly as you think you did. And I think we've got to get it where we can maintain playing hard without fouling and also thinking. And I think that's a characteristic that we're going to have to create over time. I don't think that's something that you can do right away. I mean, I think it's different for our guys, what some of the things we're doing. We've had to tweak how we're playing because of our personnel, which is fine. That's the coach's job to do that. And, I think it's trial and error right now. We've had so many games in a row with a young team, we haven't been able to transition or change as much as we like, which is part of it. Now we'll get a chance after these two games to really try to recalibrate and figure out who we are.
You haven't been here for too long, but, one of your colleagues, obviously, with Football Today, the change that you see made in football, do you kind of have any insider kind of reaction to –
obviously, the coach has been great to me, and I hope the best for him and his family. I mean, it's a unfortunate situation. These things are made, these decisions are made, and I wish the best for him and his family. And I hope Pirate Nation gets behind the next coach, and we get this thing up and going. And I think he's probably laid a foundation for the future. I don't know much about football, but I think we have some good young guys, and hopefully those guys will stick around, and we'll get this thing going.
Coach, I want to ask you a question as far as December rolls around. I know that you've talked, obviously, about the layoff, and you'd like to have another game or two in there. What do you have to do in the December? I know you're not looking ahead. You have Appalachian State, but going ahead, is there a certain game plan that you'll have like going forward?
We've got a schedule for the whole month of December, how we're going to handle this deal, and it'll be different, but that doesn't mean it's bad. And I think, to tell you the truth, we'll be able to do a little mini camp, and we'll do some different things that I think will – hopefully get us better. I thought we played in some regards. It was we talk about when we figure out one thing, it seems like something else breaks. The other night we didn't turn it over and then we didn't guard. So hopefully we can get some things resolved, and I think that'll be something that we've got a plan for the whole month of December, including a lot of recruiting days.
Good luck to you against Appalachian State.
Thank you.
That was the basketball round up there with Coach Dooley, Jaden Gardner, and Sean Williams, and big game this weekend. Against App State, another in-state opponent, and this time it's in Greenville. The Mountaineers are, challenging non-conference schedule. They play the Sun Belt, which is a pretty good basketball league. So it's a game that'd be nice to, especially after losing to High Point Wilmington, it'd be nice to get this one against Appalachian.
Yeah, it would. Hate to lose three straight in-state opponents for sure. And another note about App State, they're coached by Jim Fox, who was a longtime assistant prior to going to App State. He was on the staff of Bob McKillop, who's had such tremendous success down at Davidson. So he's certainly been around winning basketball, and he's seemingly building that App State program into a contender in the Sun Belt. They were they were, I think it was either 8-8 or 9-9. I can't recall exactly how many league games the Sun Belt teams played, but they were 500 in league play a year ago. And like I said, have faced a tremendous schedule up to this point in the season. And taking a look at things as far as App State's record, they are 2-4. And most recently, they faced off with Winston-Salem State on Monday night, and they defeated the Rams 91-64 up in Boone.
Side note question, Bubba. Up there at Appalachian State's basketball arena, I can't think of the name of it right now. I'm sure you know it.
Yeah, it's the Holmes Convocation Center. It's very, very nice arena.
They have a indoor football league team called the High Country Grizzly, I believe it is. Have you been to a game? You're much closer than I am.
I'm familiar with them, but no, I've never attended one of the games.
Okay, just curious. It has nothing to do with anything. just curious.
But yeah, I'm definitely familiar with them, and a guy that played at my high school, North Davidson. I didn't play with him, but he came along after my time there, and I know he played a little bit with the High Country Grizzlies that you referring to.
Yeah, I've often wondered how, and I don't know, the roof in Minji's may be too low for it to ever happen. I've often wondered how an indoor football league team would do in Greenville. Again, I think the roof in Minji's may be a little low for that, but it's neither here nor there. We got any more interviews, Bubba, or is that it?
No, and that'll wrap things up as far as our interviews, but a little bit more about App State before we wrap things up. And that's what. They opened the year with a D2 foe in Morris Hill, and they destroyed them 125-62. And then they played down in Tuscaloosa against Alabama, like I mentioned. And they lost a hard-fought 81-73 game. And then they played Purdue. I believe that was in a tournament. I'm trying to remember if that was down in Charleston or maybe the Islands, be it the Bahamas or somewhere. But I know that was, in fact, a tournament. And Purdue, that's the most sound defeat App State suffered this year. That was 92-70. And then they gave Greg Marshall and the Wichita State Shockers all they wanted before falling 82-76. And then their other loss was against Ball State, 94-86. So as you see, they're a fairly high-scoring team, and they had that three-headed monster of Ronshad Shabazz, Forrest, and the other whose name escapes me at the moment. But they're certainly going to be a tall task, quite possibly the toughest team we've faced to date, at least at home. So don't be surprised if and this is one that could certainly go either way, and I think the Mountaineers may very well be a slight favorite in this one coming in. I know they were, according to ESPN, as of a few days ago.
Yeah, we can't turn the ball over with their ability to score. You want to limit possessions, not give them extra possessions. So we need to take care of the ball and play good defense to have a chance against the Mountaineers. And hopefully Gardner and Williams will both be hot, and we can get a W. Hey, before we get out of here, Bubba, need to mention 2 weeks from Saturday, that's going to be Saturday, December 15th, at Professor Cool's in Greenville. We're going to have the Independence Bowl anniversary party, celebrating the 40th anniversary of the 1978 Independence Bowl champion East Carolina Pirates. If people want to come, we're still taking RSVPs.
Most definitely. If you would, just email us at dsportsobj@gmail.com. Again, dsportsobj@gmail.com. Or you can go onto our Facebook page and under the event and just comment with your name and then who's in your party, or not necessarily who's in your party, but just how many are in your party, and then we'll get you written down and look forward to seeing you on the 15th.
Yeah, 15th is going to be from 2 to 4 p.m. We may hang around a little bit afterwards, it's a little unofficial podcast party thereafter, but we're going to have a lot of players from that 1978 team there in person. As of right now, we can say touchdown Tony Collins, Terry Gallagher, Who else do we have that's supposed to be there in parts of Bubba? Can you drop a couple more names?
Yeah, Eddie Hicks, of course, an excellent running back that was on that team. Also, Theodore Sutton, Zach Valentine, I believe. And so, and then more.
We'll have even more, and then
Thomas,
we're going to have
Thomas McLaurin from down in Georgia. He's a North Carolina native, but now makes his home in the Atlanta area. He's going to come up along with, like you said, Terry Gallagher, who's from down in Warner Robins, Georgia. So it's going to be an awesome afternoon at Professor O'Cool's, and definitely make it out if you can. And then if you can't, then we certainly intend on it being on Facebook Live, as our nostalgia party was back in July, as well as all of our other platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, et cetera.
Yeah, that's right. There'll be a couple of those formats where you'll be able to stream it live. I don't think it'll be available live on every one of them. I could be wrong on that. We need David to clarify that. But I know a couple of them you'll be able to listen to the podcast live as it's happening. The rest of them, it'll be up archived as soon as it's over. Then it will be available on Facebook Live video stream, where you can look at how ugly we are as we talk to the players from the 78 Independence Ball Team there on Facebook Live. So if you can't join us in person, listen to it or watch it. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have some special surprises calling in. We won't say who right now, but we got two or three big surprises planned, if everything goes as planned, that we'll be calling in. So I guess anything else we need to talk about, Bubba, or is that it?
Yeah, there are a couple other things that I want to go ahead and plug and have our listeners keep an eye out for, and that is our Army-Navy podcast. It's going to be a tremendous, tremendous podcast. We talked to several folks tied to that game. We talked to the play-by-play voices of both academies. We talked to head coach at Army, Jeff Munkin. And we also talked to current players as well as former players. So we got perspective from several folks that are in that Army-Navy matchup or have been in that Army-Navy matchup down through the years. So it's going to be tremendous. And then also, and that's going to be dropping on, I think it's December the 4th, and with that game being played December the 8th up in Philadelphia at Lincoln Financial Field. And then in addition to that, on Sunday, we'll have our Pirate football playback taking a look at the NC State game. Hopefully we'll be talking about a shocking win over the Wolfpack, who were about a 23.5 or 24-point favorite over our Pirates. And to do that, we'll be joined by former ECU receiver Andrew Bodenheimer. Bodie was a walk-on and had a tremendous career, had right around 100 receptions, and we're looking forward to having him on the Sports Objective for the first time.
Yeah, he was part of the 06 team that went up to Raleigh and got the W in Carter Finley, correct?
That was actually a little before his time. He was 08 to 12. Because
okay.
I know for a fact he was a senior when we played down in the New Orleans Bowl.
Okay. Well, who am I thinking of? Getting confused with somebody.
Maybe you're mixing him up with Kevin Roach.
Possibly.
Kevin Roach or Rogers.
Bobby Good. Stephen Rogers?
Yeah, Stephen Rogers.
Stephen Rogers is who I'm thinking of. Yeah, I believe Stephen Rogers is who I'm getting Bodie mixed up with.
I think Bobby Good wrapped his – yeah, Bobby Good was a senior, I believe, on that 2016.
Yeah. Some white wide receiver. I'm mixed up with. But Andrew Bodenheimer was a great receiver, and can't wait to have him on the show. And, Bodie, if you hear this before you come on Sunday, don't be offended that I forgot what years you played here. I guess that's it. We did this one without David. What do you think, Bubba? You think we did okay?
I think we did okay. As you can tell, we're recording this at nearly 11 o'clock at night and not feeling the best, at least on my part, and also being quite the zombies due to a lack of sleep the last couple of nights.
We've been busy. I've had a long day. Bubba's had a long day. You know, so we're doing the best we can, okay?
Don't laugh at all. How many times we're misspeaking and stuttering and stammering and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully the content will make up for it.
Hey, you can laugh if you want to. But for Bubba Rosenbaum, and even though Dave Richmond isn't here, on behalf of Dave Richmond, I'm Kyle McRae.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.